Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Carolyn Donaldson. From the first time Fred Rogers, known to his fans across generations as Mr. Rogers, walked through that famous door and into our living rooms on February 19, 1968, his warmth, his kindness, and ability to talk to children on their level was television magic. By changing from his dress shoes into sneakers and donning one of his many cardigan sweaters, each knitted by his mother, welcoming us as he fed the fish, Mr. Rogers made us feel that he was talking directly to us when we were children. For today's Take Note, which originally aired in June of 2018, we talked with two local folks who had the opportunity to work with Fred up close and personal. Joanne Lobig of State College was a production intern and became an assistant on his show in the 1980s. Corey Geishauser, a Blair County native, also worked with Fred in the 90s and developed a lifelong and personal friendship. Corey and Joanne, again, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Let's start first with Joanne, because she has an earlier history, I think, with Fred. And a little bit about you. You were in Pittsburgh, finishing up a college career in communications.
I went to the University of Pittsburgh. Actually, now I did a double major in English literature and film studies, but I was just interested in popular culture and television. Mm-hmm. So I was coming to the end of my college life, and I wanted a job, and I knew that I needed to get some experience. And in those days, it wasn't so much internships. You kind of volunteered. It wasn't as official as it is now. And I lived a few blocks away from WQED, so I had an acquaintance who worked on the books that Mr. Rogers used to write.
Okay.
And he got me an introduction down there, so I was able to become a volunteer, and I used to help answer fan mail. The kids would write letters in, and I would help with their responses.
Wonderful. And tell us the timing of that. I know we're dating ourselves, but
yeah,
I'm right there with you, Joanne.
It was mid-80s.
Mid-80s.
Yeah.
Okay. So you were 20, 21.
Yeah, very, very young.
Wow.
So after I did the volunteer work for a little while, then they were hiring production assistants. So I applied for the job and I got the job. So that was my first job, my very first job out of college, not waiting tables or doing any of the things that you do while you're in college. But my first real job was working
in the profession.
In the profession.
Wow.
Was working for, it was called Family Communications then.
Right.
That was the company that did the books and the shows.
The shows.
They did five shows, did a week of shows.
Mm-hmm.
So you worked for a few months and then you went on a hiatus. Then you came back and did some more shows.
Okay.
So I did that for three separate segments.
Okay.
So 15 shows total.
15 shows. So total time period then that you were surrounded by?
It was about
by?
A year and a half, I
okay.
think.
And then you went on and went on
yeah,
with
then
your
I
career.
Yeah, and then I went on and from that experience just went on and did other jobs.
Good. Okay, we'll get into many more specifics about that, but let's set the stage here with Corey's involvement. And again, it really started from the college experience, right, Corey?
I was at the Art Institute of Pittsburgh, majoring in visual communication, advertising, graphic design, and I knew a gentleman who was in an art contest with me, a fellow cartoonist. His name was Corey also, Corey Glickman. He was the art director at WQED Design Center. Corey Glickman and Corey Geishauser, they called us Kosher Corey and Catholic Corey. And he said, why don't you come in and do, you know, call me when you're finishing up at the Art Institute and do the last few months with us and let's do an internship. And it wasn't a paid internship, but they financed my portfolio, which was fantastic because there was a lot of money that went into that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a WQED filmed and taped in the Mr. Rogers program. And that is how I was introduced to Fred. But the year I was there in 1993 was a big year. It was they were celebrating their 25th anniversary. So it was just a huge time to be there.
Okay. So take us back and let's start again, back with Joanne. Mm-hmm. What was your first meeting with Fred? Can you remember that? Can you remember some of those early meetings and how you interacted with him?
Well, I have to say, I didn't grow up in this country as a child, so I didn't watch the show. So when I met him, I didn't have that as a fan.
Mm-hmm.
He was just the person in charge because it was his company. I mean, the office was in the building of QED, but it was all about Fred. So it was always Fred, Fred, Fred.
Mm-hmm.
So when he walked in, he had a presence about him and an aura, but I wasn't in awe or afraid of him like you might if you saw somebody, you know, a big celebrity.
Sure.
It was just someone who was my boss, mm-hmm. and who, he wasn't there all the time. And I had gotten to know him a little bit by doing the letters, and I would help because I was doing the fan letters, so I would mm-hmm. read the letters that kids were writing to him. So I kind of got to know him through what the kids were saying about him, mm-hmm. and then I was help write some of the responses and working with the woman that I, who her name was Hedda, and she was the person who dealt with that.
Okay.
She was a, I believe a psychologist, but she was somebody who dealt with the kids on that level, not because mm-hmm. that's what he did.
Absolutely.
So then when I met him, he was just nice. I mean, I know that that's such a, doesn't sound like a really great word to call somebody, but he was just nice in all that, everything that nice means. He was just a really nice person. He just would talk to you, and he was funny, and he just was charming to be around. And mm-hmm. he'd always remember my name always, because his wife's name is Joanne.
That's
so
right.
So he liked that my name was Joanne. Mm-hmm. But he was, he was in charge, but he had other people who ran the company, but mm-hmm. you could tell he was in charge all the time. And he just enjoyed being there. He just enjoyed being in the office and talking to everybody. And
took time to
yes,
talk to people.
Absolutely took time to talk to people. He wasn't one of those, you hear about people that just kind of come in and mm-hmm. they're there for 5 minutes and bark out a bunch of orders and this is how it has to be. He wasn't like that at all. He had an office mm-hmm. full of memorabilia of the things kids that had given and sent him.
Mm-hmm.
Had, pictures from, I'm sure, famous people. I probably mm-hmm. didn't know who they were, but and he would just, you would go in there and talk to him, and I would take letters that I had written out, and he would look at them and see if that would work, because he couldn't, not that he didn't answer them, it was his words, but we would use his words and kind of put
sure.
things together, and he would always sign everything. And
I understand that was part of his meticulous
yes,
behavior,
yes.
And Mr. McFeely mentioned that in one of our recent gatherings where we dedicated that stamp to Mr. Rogers, and Mr. McFeely said that's so appropriate because he did respond to all
yes,
that fan mail,
he absolutely
and that was
did.
A great way to communicate.
But, I mean, I was so young, and probably if I'd been a bit older and wiser, maybe I would have been in awe. I would have known better to, but I, you're just
yeah.
young and,
no, but that's
and you
a
just
good...
go in and you just are trying to do your best job possible. And,
sure.
And he
sure.
wasn't there all the time. I mean, he was busy because if he was writing the shows, mm-hmm. and he wrote everything. So
wow.
if he wasn't there, it wasn't, he was doing all the other things that he did. And then he had this company of people that took what he wanted, and then they put it into action
into
and
action.
Did everything. Yeah,
very good. Okay, let's bounce over to Corey now. Tell us your first meeting. Again, you were down in the in the design center,
just
so you
down
were
the
working
hall.
Down
just
the hall.
Down the hall, and take a left around the bend. So I saw him a lot, but the 25th year, there were lots of reporters coming in and out to, get a piece of Mr. Rogers. He had to talk about 25 years, he was back and forth from New York and L.A. a lot. And he had just recently returned from the West Coast. He was on the Arsenio Hall show. And when he was out there, Arsenio gave him a Boys in the Hood kind of a jacket. It was very colorful, it was awesome. And Fred put it on, and Fred told a story of how his family took in a black man when they were young, and he ended up going on to being a pilot and in the Air Force and all that. So Fred had made this connection that he had, a brother in the neighborhood. And you can YouTube that episode. It's fantastic. But I said, I'd love to get an in so I can get his attention. So I drew a caricature of Fred and Arsenio. And I had walked right into his office. His office was awesome because there was no desks. Mm-hmm. He just had a couch.
Mm-hmm.
You want to, oh, my goodness, spend a few minutes with Mr. Rogers and you're cured. And so I just went in and I had set this cartoon down. And the story goes that we were always pulling pranks on each other in the art department. And the next day, coworkers were saying, "Hey, Mr. Rogers wants to see you in his office." Kind of like the principal wants to see you. And I'm like, "No, he doesn't." And the whole time I was there, they kept saying, "No, really, we're pulling pranks on each other all the time. I'm not going down there." So the end of the day, I'm walking out with a few of them. And sure enough, here's a guy, and you wouldn't really recognize him at first because he looked like Senator Paul Simon. He had the glasses, he wore a bow tie, mm-hmm. and he had a trench coat a lot. And he had taken that and matted it and framed it, this picture that he did, and he had it in the vestibule of the family communications. And there he is with a coworker looking at it. And I was there, walked right by, and he's talking about this. And he says, I wish I could meet the gentleman who drew this. And I just jokingly went up and said, you won't have to go far. I'm right here. So, I mean, that's how we met through the art of caricature.
Oh,
and
wow.
We just hit it off. And I mean, I did a lot of work in the design center, but whenever he would tape the show, what I did was just go down and play. I mean, I'd help out mm-hmm. with the art department, but I would just draw caricatures of the puppets. And there would be kids down there, and I drew them pictures. And I'd draw Johnny Costa, who was the music director, and just loads of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Loads
what
of
memories.
Fun. Oh, what mercy. Memories. I'll never, ever forget those.
Joanne, were you on the set then, too? I noticed
oh,
you
yeah.
had some pictures from your time there. So
right.
tell us about when you actually went into production then with some of those shows.
When I was hired as a production assistant, it was kind of like a theater company in a way, in that you all are together to put on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're asking me about what it was like to meet Fred, I hope this sounds the right way, but he was just one of the people that was there. I mean, mm-hmm. he was always in charge. You always knew that everything we did was for him.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just part of us. We were all working together to make the show.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the kind of atmosphere that it was when you worked there. You just did everything that you could. He would write the script, and then we had to take it and then make that happen. It's
mm-hmm.
either the neighborhood parts or the magic, you know, the make-believe neighborhood.
Right.
So I remember once there was a space alien. I don't remember all the details. It was so long ago. But mm-hmm. he wanted to have Chuck Aber look like he was come from space or somehow dressed up like space. And I had to find a scuba diver suit.
Oh, okay.
So that he could wear that and he looked like an alien.
Sure.
So, you know, so he wrote this in.
That.
Do you remember that
I
one?
Do remember
so
that.
So he wrote it in the script, so then I had to go find it. I had
gotcha.
To go find a shop that would lend us a scuba diving suit that he could wear on the set. And then it was really hot. So that was the kind of things that we did. You know, we
cool.
took his imagination and what he wrote, and
right.
then we made it come to life. And this is in the days, believe it or not, before computers, before the internet. So
mm-hmm.
I would be on the phone just trying to find things that he wrote about, every little detail, every prop. I worked with the art director, and we had to go find everything,
mm-hmm.
or she would have to make everything. I think in that episode with the scuba suit, there was an alien puppet, so they had to make this alien in this kind of a spaceship thing that would come down. So they had to make that. So we had to find all the bits that would go
wow.
into making it. So it was really fun.
Sounds like his mind never stopped working, like even while he was in production and things.
And we went on location too. He would have
wow.
In the script, we'd go behind the scenes, or we went places. So we'd all go together like this big troupe, and we'd go places and
wow.
Very
do
cool.
the interviews and set it up. Yeah.
Folks, we are about halfway through our program. This is whizzing by, and we've got so much more to cover here. We are talking with Corey Geishauser and Joanne Peacock-Lobig, both who worked at different times, but with Fred Rogers, as we take a look at the 50th anniversary of Fred Rogers' Neighborhood and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. We thank you so much for joining us here on Take Note. I'm Carolyn Donaldson. So fast forward to your graduation, because we've got a special sound effect that we want to play for our audience today. He was this kind of guy, right? He stayed with you through that year as you were graduating.
Well, one thing that he did several things for my graduation. He took me to see a one-man play on Ty Cobb, which was great. It was Tom Atkins, who is from the Pittsburgh area and used to be on the Rockford Files.
Mm-hmm.
But he did Fred knew I loved baseball, so he said, took me to go see that. And my most prized possession to this day is that autographed trolley that I usually have wrapped in cellophane and three or four pillows and, you know, hidden. But the other thing was I invited him to come. Talking to Fred was just like talking to anybody. He,
mm-hmm.
you know, he was a star. He was a celebrity. But he never, ever gave himself that type of – he's very humble. And I was like, oh, hey, I'm having a graduation party. Why don't you – come on over. And he actually could not make the party because something had been going on in the neighborhood or something came up. But what happened was when I had this party, he called to say, I wish I could be there. Mm-hmm. And then,
let's leave it for the
leave
audience.
Leave it for that?
Yeah, let's listen to a clip that you've had all these years. Let's listen to a portion of it.
Hello, Corey. It's Fred Rogers, and it's 9:00 on Friday. Just calling to congratulate you on your graduation, and I wish that I'd been able to come over to your house. I imagine your party's going on right now, and I just wanted to be celebrating with you. But I hope to see you next week, and just know that I'm thinking about you, and I'll have a graduation present for you later on. Congratulations. Bye-bye.
Okay, so that's the first part, right?
But I got to tell you how that happened.
Okay.
This was before cell phones. So we had this party. I had about 30 people at this party, friends and family. And I didn't know this, but my aunt had gone into the back room where we had our phone, and she was on the phone when he called. So he went right to the voicemail.
Oh, how wonderful for you.
Well, that night, I was like, you know, hey, I'm expecting a phone call from Mr. Wright. He said he might call, you know.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And she goes, oh, my gosh, I've been on the phone for the last 10 minutes. And the beeper, the blinker was beeping. I said, we missed the call. But then I realized, oh, my goodness.
Right.
I have it on Memorex now. I mean, I have this tape. So
okay.
I just remember that night. Being furious at the time and like, I missed the call.
And now what a treasure. Oh, and because not only did Mr. Rogers call, but let's listen to see one of several folks who then called.
Hello, Corey. This is Daniel Strelper Tiger calling from the neighborhood of Make Believe. I just wanted you to know I was proud of you. Because you graduated today from the Art Institute of Pittsburgh. And, well, here's King Friday the 13th. He wants to say the same thing.
Oh, this is King Friday the 13th, bringing you congratulatory greetings from this castle.
And we have to cut it off there, but we want you to, you can tune in to Corey's YouTube channel
what
and listen to the whole thing.
Oh, my gosh.
Joanne, is that, I mean, again, you weren't, this was after your time there, but that was the kind of guy he was. And he played all those characters, right?
Oh,
you got
yeah.
to see and hear mm-hmm. him in the land of make-believe.
Yeah, well, I would get the puppets and put them where they were meant to be. So he would, you know, when we were doing the tapings.
Right.
And yeah, no, he was just fun. I mean, you know, as I said, I never thought of him as this big star. He mm-hmm. was just part of the office and the group. And mm-hmm. I was so young and it was just... He was just part of the fun, and he really did get into the fun. I mean, he just goofed around with everybody. You kind of forgot. Like, you met that first meeting, like, oh, here's somebody famous, and then you just forgot that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just part of the company
mm-hmm.
who was there.
But there was such a deeper message with what he was doing. Did you sense that when you were producing those things, when you were around him, that this was, like I said, television magic, that he was actually imparting values and, you know, some really cool things that kids could learn about?
Oh, absolutely. He would just say, hey, I'm going to the children's hospital. You want to come with me? Absolutely. You know, even if I have to hold the Sharpies or something, you know. And he was bigger to me. Now, he was, I watched him when I was growing up. So he was like a boyhood hero to me. And then to work for him, it was just unreal. It was like surreal is what it was. And, his presence, like Joanne had talked, it was incredible because he was bigger than a president. He was bigger than a rock star, but because everybody knew Mr. Rogers, mm-hmm. everybody in the world. And what you see is what you get with Fred, and you hear that from many of his coworkers and friends and family. And he would be as gentle with a child as he would be with an adult. Of course, his vocabulary would change a little bit for the old. But one of the things that many people would say is, you know, when we watched you on TV, we thought you were talking just to me by myself. And when you would meet him someplace, when I hear tons of people telling me stories that they met Mr. Rogers at the Pittsburgh airport, because he was always going, like she said, on location to shoot a lot of footage, and they said, I know he was in a hurry, but And you know, people who are with family communications, come on, we got to catch a plane. He would stop just about everything just to focus on you, that person in that minute, in that moment. So everything that he was preaching and teaching on the airwaves, he did. He lived that every day.
Wow.
It was goosebumps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are we missing some of that in today's world? And do we need more Mr. Rogers out there?
He was definitely unique. And I think that's why he was so special. And I think, thank goodness, people understood that and saw that he was unique. And as I said, he had this company of people around him. And that's, at least when I was working there, that was our number one job, was to take his message and bring it to people. You know, take the scripts that he wrote that he put such care into and make sure that we translated that into exactly what he meant. And that, and we were proud to do it, and that was part of it. But yeah, he was a unique person. I mean, yes, it would be love to have another somebody like Mr. Rogers, but I just don't think that's possible, because he's just definitely one of those people. At that moment in time, he was exactly what the world needed, and he was that person.
He was a true friend to public media, too, because that's another kind of famous thing, is when he went down to Washington and sat in front of a Senate hearing and really in simple language described what the true mission of public media is and what his company was doing for children. And do you also agree, Corey,
if it wasn't for Fred going up, not up against Senator Pastore, but making his speech, his pitch known that day, his mission, that's what I was trying to, we might not have had Sesame Street, or the Electric Company, or present-day the Wild Kratts, and you know, the Cat in the Hat, and we might not all be sitting here. Who knows? But, oh, yes, definitely have to YouTube that or get on Google and find out when Mr. Rogers went to Washington.
Let's talk about his favorite puppets that you thought of, or favorite songs, because music and art were such an important part. I mean, that was probably the first time I'd ever heard the word Yo-Yo Ma and cello when I was watching, you know. And I remember sitting there with my younger sister. I used to babysit by putting Mr. Rogers on. It was a great way of learning together. Did you have any favorite memory you want to share with our audiences here?
Well, what was so interesting, when he filmed, the music that you heard was actually being played in the studio. So we would have the musicians come and set up. So I got to know the musicians better, Johnny and the different, the people that were in the band. I'd never seen anything like that before. So that was a lot of fun, just to hang around with the musicians and talk to them and see how much of a part of that show they were and how much he enjoyed sitting with them and talking to them and playing with them.
All right. And original music, too.
Oh, it was all live right there. And Johnny Costa was explained to me once, I think is the best description of Johnny. He was all three of the Marx Brothers tied into one. He was so funny and so talented. It was just amazing to watch him work. And how Fred, you know, composed all of the songs, but Johnny would just make magic out of magic, if that's at all possible. And I think my favorite puppets that Fred did were the ones when he got to, you would see a lot more of the funnier side, or I'll say cornier side, because Cornflake, especially Corny, I loved when Fred did that. I loved when he voiced X the Owl, because he was one of these guys that kind of talk like this, and he was cracked me up. And then when he went to, now this is if you really know your neighborhood of make-believe, when he went to someplace else, which is a different, had Don Quixote. Hee-haw, Harry. Oh my gosh, when he would do those three characters, I'd be in tears, because he was so funny.
Sure.
It was, you know, they were all personalities of Fred, I guess. You know, King Friday was the pompous one, and Lady Lane was the mischief maker. But whenever he would do those three, it just cracked me up. And songs, I think one of my favorite songs he did was the two of them, If You Would Look Carefully and Listen Carefully, because I'm really trying to explain to my two daughters who are 4 and 6, you got to stop, look, and listen with everything in life to learn. And the other one is Let's Think of Something to Do While We're Waiting. It's fantastic, because everybody in today's world wants to jump right on their iPods and their computers and their phones and do something. But Fred, in this song, you have to listen to the song. He'll tell you, instead of just sitting here in the doctor's office, let's let's play a game.
Right.
Let's you know, make up a play, or let's write a song, you know.
He would sing that between takes if we were waiting for something to be set up again.
He'd sing that.
He would just sit there and sing that song, yeah.
Wow. When was the last time you saw Mr. Rogers?
It was up here, up in State College in Happy Valley.
Okay.
And it was in 2002, I want to say springtime. Mm-hmm. And one person I always wanted to have Mr. Rogers meet was another person I admired, was my grandma, Kitty. And so I took her to
There was the Job Thomas building,
yeah.
And we were celebrating an anniversary here for WPSU and had brought Mr. Rogers in.
It was packed house. It was, and I just remember my grandma was getting a little bit older, so I was kind of escorting grandma around. And the funny thing that happened that night was afterwards, I knew where Fred, his exits and stuff, because a lot of times there was like paparazzi, right? And they would move him out one way. So I ran down and I saw him. He says, "Oh, Corey." And he had asked if I was joining them later. But I said, "No, I want to get a picture of you and my grandma. I'll catch up with you later." And I went and took the picture. This was before this. Well, there were cell phones, but they weren't that fancy. And took the picture. The long story short was the picture didn't actually take. It was a delayed reaction. And it flashed after they had already posed. So I have a picture of Fred going one way and the picture of my grandma going the other way. Delayed reaction. But I still got them both in the picture, which I thought was pretty good instead of getting like my thumb.
We're almost out of time and we could go on and on, but summarize for us maybe the impact that Fred had on your own life. And again, I don't mean to make it so deep and everything, but you know, you took away a lot, I would imagine, with your interaction with him.
Well, he gave me an opportunity. You know, it was my first job, and it really meant a lot, and it kind of started me on other jobs that I had,
mm-hmm.
and he believed in me that I could do it, and you know, and the people that he hired good people, mm-hmm. So I may not have interacted with him every day, but I interacted with the people that were in the office, and they were, you know, extensions of him, and they mm-hmm. were just such good people, just really nice people to work with. It was a very you know, you start off, that's your first job.
Right.
And I kind of thought all jobs had to be that way. And then I found out they weren't.
They weren't.
They weren't all that way.
We need to go back to that land to make believe in Mr. Rogers. How about you,
lovely.
Corey?
You used the word kind. I mean, he has a quote that says there's three ways to success. And that's one, be kind, two, to be kind, and three, to be kind. And in the media world, how people are in the media world, it's kind of cutthroat. And to hear something like, to be kind, it's really something else. We need more Mr. Rogers in today's world. We need a lot more kindness. Bottom line.
Mm-hmm. That's a great way to end this wonderful tribute to Mr. Rogers. And thank you both, Corey Geishauser and Joanne Peacock-Lobig, coming in today to share that with us. Joanne Lobig of State College and Corey Geishauser of Altoona both worked with Fred Rogers on the Mr. Rogers Neighborhood TV show. This interview originally aired on June 15, 2018. Thank you for joining us on Take Note. I'm Carolyn Donaldson.